Happy New Year. It's Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
Good to have you on this Friday. We know many of you are off today, but thank you for listening. And however you're accessing the show, whether it be your smart speaker at home, on the computer, maybe you're on the Odyssey app, thank you guys for being here. We got a big show today and a lot to talk about. Ironically, you know, coming off of the New Year's games, this is a big weekend from the NFL standpoint because the seedings will get figured out. We're going to talk to BMAC, Brian McFadden from CBS Sports, coming up here in less than 15 minutes. We'll get his take on all the games, including our game with the Saints. And I hate the Saints, but this isn't really about that, right? We know both teams aren't going to the playoffs. They're hot. We're hot. But I also think jobs are on the line when it comes to our team. We're going to get into all of that with BMAC coming up. Mike, how was your New Year's?
Oh, it was great, man. I was just telling the guys, we had a little gig. I got a band, my buddy Ron. We call it the Captain Ron Band. So it was Oren likes kind of like the yacht rock. It's a little more kind of like R&B, disco kind of stuff from the 70s. Earth, Wind, and Fire and, you know, all that great stuff. I play that funky music. Boy, I put the video up at Mike Bell ATL. But no, we had a great time. And we got some stories. I know you got some stories, too, to tell. But just yesterday, just pigging out, watching all that football. And to be honest, none of those games were compelling. Not one was interesting other than, you know, some of the, you know, watching Texas Tech just basically shoot themselves in the foot time and time again on offense. And, of course, Alabama humiliated. So last night was the best game. Miami was also compelling. We'll talk about all that. What did you end up doing for New Year's?
Chilling, man. I'll say this, and I was just having this conversation with Steve. He's our production guy. And I said, hey, how was your New Year's? And he was like, mellow. And I was like, yeah, the older I get, there was a time in my life where I wanted to be at every party, wanted to be the in every gig, and, you know, I felt like I was missing out on something. Not anymore. And so it was very chill. We had a great dinner, Mike, had great prime rib, did it up. But I got to tell you guys, we start the show, and I'll just tell you this, because there are folks who are listening today that maybe over the weekend you got some bad news. And I got to tell you, New Year's Eve night, it's about 5 minutes to New Year's to bring in 2026. And the phone rings. Oh, it's Trin. It's my daughter. She's in Dallas, man. She's visiting some friends. This is great. She's about to wish us a happy new year, and everything will be wonderful. And all I hear is, Mom, we're all right. It's the worst.
Oh, God.
Phone call you want to get.
Oh, man.
And I hear that like in the background. I'm like,
what?
All right. And then my wife's whole face changed. And she goes, I'm just telling you, we're okay. We were just in an accident.
Oh, geez, Louise.
On the highway, somebody clipped a mic. Her and her friend, her girlfriends, they were in the car. And the car that clipped them did like, you know, they did like the, they lost control. So it's just spinning in front of them.
Oof.
And it was on the highway. They were going like 70 miles per hour. And they happened to be in my daughter's friend's mom's brand new.
Oh, God.
Cadillac electric
vehicle,
right? This thing, the axle's gone. Like she's sending pictures.
Holy moly.
So New Year's went from, hey, countdown to.
Was it 75, 85?
No,
was it?
No. This was in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no, highway
on
Texas.
The highway, yes. And so she's visiting friends for New Year's. And she's sending pictures, and the cops are there, and it's just like it completely changed the whole mood of bringing in New Year. The good news is she's fine. They're fine. Car is totaled. It's wrecked. But the point is, man, you know, we talk about this all the time. Like, hey, be safe. And sometimes it's not your fault. It's not, you know, you're not the reason why things happen. But, man, it made me think so quickly and easily how things change. And I say that to say as we bring in 2026, guys, Mike and I, we live this way. Live your life. Enjoy. Love. Make sure you tell the people that you love in your life that you love them as 2026 comes into play. Because that was just one of those phone calls that Mike, a few centimeters. It could have been the other way.
And I don't, I mean, like, not to be, you know, glib about it. You just, it's about her.
Could have been the other way.
But about you can't even enjoy it. You're completely preoccupied
and
thinking about it.
And literally, Michelle's like, we're on our way. I'm like, we're not going to Dallas at midnight. What are you talking? But as parents, you feel helpless.
Right?
And it was just like, oh, crap. Long story short, man, everything turned out to be great. We had it ended up being a fun New Year's. We stayed up probably a lot later than we needed to because of that and just the adrenaline flowing. But it was great, man, and we hope you brought in the New Year. But I'm saying that and telling you that story just because, just like that, things can change. And it's just so – life is fragile, man, and I'm not here to preach. I'm just telling you, like, we were both like, holy crap. And then when you see these pictures of the car
– oh, man.
You're like – and there's one where my daughter's in the car before the cops get there because they're taking pictures. And you see her face like, holy crap, I just survived that. So I said, are you all right? She said, yeah, the seat belt.
Oh, just kind of bruised?
Yeah, big
bruise. So was the driver, was it just driver incompetence or was it wet conditions?
So
what was it?
So here's what's crazy, Mike.
Driver jacked up?
Yes, the cops, when they showed up, they were like, totally their fault. They should have been exiting, but they missed their exit and tried.
Mike. This is, all right, so if you're new to the show for Christmas week, I see this every week. I drive south to 85, and it's like, dude, in the old days, if you miss the exit, you just pay
Keep
the
going.
Price. Another 5 minutes, and you double back. Now, it's three lanes over. I see this almost every week on the way home on 85. Yeah,
it's
come
brutal.
On, people.
Yeah, so that's how they clipped them. And so when they just decided, oh, we're going to miss the exit, we're going to still get back up. And they hit them, and both cars, lost control. And she was lucky they didn't hit a wall or anything. But at the end of the day, man, we're good. She's good. But I want to tell you.
Does he play for the Cowboys?
I wish. I told her that. I was like, what's he look like? Who's this guy? She goes, the cops wouldn't allow them over there.
Oh.
Because they wanted to de-escalate the situation.
Okay.
And I was like, so you didn't even see these people. You didn't talk to them. She goes, No. The cops handled everything. And at first I was like, that's kind of weak sauce. But then I was thinking, Mike, people lose control. They get hot. You just don't know how people react.
If you got that your kid in the car and you're a dad, you might start swinging on this dude. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So either way, man, good news is everybody's healthy. Everybody's fine. We hope you are as well. We got a lot to get to, man. Georgia Bulldogs last night. Mike said it. Best game of the college football playoff. But there are some questions as to how this game played out with coaching, and that's questioning Kirby Smart, which we never do because I still think he's the best coach in college football. That hasn't changed because they lose last night to Ole Miss. But, Mike, when you go back and feel and look at this game and you go, all right, they had an opportunity here. Did they risk too much there? Did they coach a little tight here? Like, where were the moments that bugged you last night about this loss?
Well, two things. I mean, and we talked about this on the pre-show, the fact that Kirby says they weren't supposed to snap the ball on fourth. Well, how the hell does that get communicated? Gunnar Stockton is about as poised can be. Where did this miscommunication occur? I mean, that's the kind of stuff I expect from a Mike Norvell down in Florida State, not from Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
You know, the best in the business. So that one, obviously, that's self-explanatory. That made no sense. The fake punt, he's done this sort of thing, but it was at midfield. And you knew it because the momentum that Ole Miss had, it made sense. You know, at least catch your breath and get a couple of first downs. Unfortunately, all they could get was a field goal out of that, and seven would have been crucial. But the thing I said to you guys earlier this morning on our pre-show, I didn't like them going into a shell before halftime.
I didn't either.
You know, I just thought it was very conservative, and just with the first down and distance, they didn't matter. You got athletes, use them. They didn't put pedal to the metal, and I think being conservative ultimately cost them.
I do too. You can't play that way. And remember, we talked about this last week. Ole Miss had nothing to lose. They were going to do everything they could and throw the ball and spread the field. They took chances, and it felt like Georgia didn't take the chances they needed to last night, even though they're right there in the game, tie game. We know this could have gone either way. The last 6 seconds were nuts and crazy. We'll try to explain to you what the officials said and why they went about it the way they did. But ultimately, Ole Miss wins this game 39-34. And, Mike, for me, when I'm watching this game, you know, for Kirby, all right, you go for it in your own territory. Like, I know he's done this before, but that was one of those calls where I'm like, I didn't necessarily like it. But if they pull it off, we're not talking about it today. But that's the one that stood out to me.
Yeah, like Orange just said in my ear, and Kirby referred to this in the postgame press conference. Yeah, I mean, the difference between this year and last year, you tried to ask a young quarterback in his first start to do something he wasn't capable of doing. That was a 2-minute drill.
That's right.
Deep in his territory. But now Gunnar beat Tennessee when you had no right to win that game. He came back to beat Ole Miss. You beat Alabama. You beat Texas. This kid's got a world of experience now, and to sit on it on your own 17, I don't buy that. You know, with all those timeouts in your pocket and a minute 43,
do something.
Go do what you do. So, to me, I've been the biggest Kirby supporter. I think he's been on point, but this smacked of 2017 in the fake punt. He got out-coached, and he owned it. They didn't run away from it. He admitted we got outplayed and out-coached.
Yeah, and the irony is most of that offensive staff is going to LSU.
Right.
So, you know, those guys are there because, again, they've been allowed to maintain, and they wanted some continuity. And obviously, you know, Lane's like, good, go get me my bonus. He gets another $500,000 for that win last night. LSU is footing the bill. That is not coming from Ole Miss, but that was part of his contract in the new negotiation. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dog fans, what are you thinking? And let me say this too. Mike's right about the Kirby calls and decision-making, but I also think he overachieved with this team.
Right.
I don't think this team was what we thought it was coming into the season. A lot of people just had them elevated because it was Georgia. And then the season started, and they had some great wins, there's no doubt. But we kept asking ourselves during the season, is this a national championship caliber team? Now, I know many of you are going to say, wait a minute, we beat this team at home. Yes, but you had to come back from behind to do it then. And last night you had a lead that you blew. And the secondary, Mike, struggled. Ole Miss threw for 362 last night.
Look, and I get it. I mean, Trinidad Chambliss, and what a great story that is. I mean, aside from Dog fans, not that he could give a flip right now. But he's an impressive young man. I love the post game. He's talking, you know, gives glory to God, talks about his teammates. He goes, but I am a baller. I love that.
I do too.
And he is. And it's almost as a college football fan, you'd love to see him have another year, but NCAA says no on that deal. But this kid just, man, how about when he run? It looked like a cross between Mike Vick and Archie Manning, speaking of an Ole Miss quarterback, when he doubled back and then is able to hit his, that's just, you can't coach against that. That's just athleticism.
It is. This is a kid that was at Ferris State. For those who don't know the story, maybe you heard it last night. It's a really cool story. But it's also, you know, it's a testament, Mike. There's a lot of kids out there that can flat out play. And they don't get a chance, or they don't get an opportunity because they don't fit the bill of the size or the prototypical quarterback that these schools are looking for. And then this is where the portal has helped so many guys out. Guys, you guys didn't know who Fernando Mendoza was 2 years ago. Don't act like you did. He was out west playing, and you had no idea who the hell he is. Now he's the best quarterback in college football, and everybody's saying he's going to be the number one pick. This is the portal at work. And there are a lot of kids like this, Mike, that can flat out play, and they just haven't been given that right opportunity because being recruited, everybody said, he's not that good, or he's not good enough for us. Now you're seeing this. The four teams left, guys, all have transfer portal quarterbacks, all four of them. So that just tells you where we're at. 404-726-0929.
And I know that, you know, I took Ohio State. I figured, you know, again, stupid me going with Ryan Day calling plays. But, I mean, they've got athleticism. Miami's got size. I mean, they just – everything Carl just touched on. You know, and Carson Beck, you know, it's unfortunate we're not going to get that, you know, Georgia versus Carson Beck storyline.
I wanted it.
And now the crazy part is Ole Miss is now a win away from the championship game, and they don't even know who's going to be able to be there with the players this week because it's the portal period, and Lane Kiffin demands that they be back at Baton Rouge. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but so many people are just hoping that Charlie Weiss says, you know what, Lane? I quit, you know, but it's not going to happen. I mean, that's too Hollywood. But, man, Golding did a hell of a job. The only misfire wasn't his fault. It's when the kid forgot to get out of bounds before halftime. He cut it inside. They would have had a long field goal. They got the best kicker in college.
They do.
You know, so that's about the only miscue, I think, from Golding. And then Golding, you see him getting after his team. I mean, got to be impressed. 2-0 now, head coach.
Yeah, and look, when they made this decision, when they knew or felt like Lane was moving on, a lot of people questioned, you know, this, but I said this to Mike. Golden had recruited a lot of these players, so there was a comfort level with him being the head coach because he was very familiar with a lot of these guys because he helped recruit them. Hey, man, coming up, B-Mac's going to join us. We'll talk to him about all things NFL as we get ready for the last game of the season. Mike, does it feel like the last game of the season?
Football season just speeds up the year. We talked about it. Here we are. Happy 2026, everybody. Yeah, I mean, look, I hope we beat the Saints. I hope we beat them 42-0. Then change my mind. I fire everybody.
More on that coming up next. It is Dukes and Bell coming up. We'll get the latest headlines, and there are a few going on around football as we get ready for another Sunday. As a matter of fact, it's the last regular season Sunday, and then we get to the playoffs, guys, believe it or not. B-Mac is here, Brian McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion, analyst for CBS Sports. And B, I want to ask you just from a player perspective, do you think that players have any say whatsoever in whether a coach stays or goes? Can they go to the owner and say, hey, we screwed up some games, but the coaching here is on point. He's doing what he needs to do. Does it matter, and does that kind of stuff happen in your experience?
In my personal experience, no, I don't think players have a say-so that is heard, where ownership or the powers that be would take what they say to heart and say, you know what, we were going to fire this coach, but because of what you said, we're not going to fire this coach. It doesn't really work that way. Now, I'm just talking about my personal experience. Now, has it happened in the National Football League before? Who knows? But oftentimes when the guys that cut the check, when their mind is made up about something, their mind is made up. Because if these players, and this is a hypothetical I'm giving you, if these players were so adamant about this coach is doing a good job and he shouldn't be fired. Well, why aren't you winning more games?
Right. I mean, I said that to Carl. I said it, and I keep talking to fans on Twitter and stuff. B, it goes back to the beginning of the season. It goes back to camp. You know, having Penix Jr. ready. Carl brought up a great point on, I think it was Tuesday's show, saying should have maybe had an open competition, you know, before we decided to hand it over to Penix. I know how the thing went down with the GM drafting him, but still, so many things that left me wanting more. If you don't beat the Saints, if you play like we played against the Rams, they should beat the Saints by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. And then the thing about this game with Atlanta and New Orleans, both teams have been playing fairly well, especially the New Orleans Saints. You know, you talk about Michael Penix, it seems like the Saints have really found their QB1 of the future in Tyler Shuck. Remember, they were heavily criticized when they selected him in the second round. But to your point with Atlanta, I mean, Atlanta has been one of the more major disappointing teams in the National Football League because of the expectations and the talent. And I go back, you talked about open competition. I go back and give you one further, one better. Why didn't the starters play in preseason games?
Right.
For the second straight year in a row, we saw no starters play in the preseason games. And I understand people say, well, open scrimmages are just as important. No, they're not the same because you're not in a game atmosphere. You're not. Preseason games are televised. Open scrimmages are not. Preseason games, fans are there. Open scrimmages, yes, you might have training camp fans, but it's not the same as having a full stadium filled, more so than fans standing on the sideline and watching. And Pat Mahomes plays every preseason. Andy Reid has his starters out there. For Atlanta, for a team that didn't make the playoffs a year ago, I feel like their starters had no right to not play in the preseason, and they got off to a slow start once again.
What's your take on Tyler Shuck, man? Kid seems to be playing well for the Saints. They're riding a little high right now. He's 6'5", 220. He's got the size. Played a lot of time and a lot of years in college. So, you know, he comes in. He's got some experience under his belt. What do you think about his play so far?
Man, he's done a really, really good job, honestly. Honestly. You know, when you talk about where he was drafted, he wasn't necessarily the household name amongst some of the other quarterbacks that were selected high. But he's played the best out of all the rookie quarterbacks this season. He's played the best. And I'll say this, the most important thing that I've seen with Tyler, his ability to win with not a lot around him. That's what good quarterbacks do. They do more with less. And if you talk about doing more with less, that's who Tyler has been. And that's why I'm really excited to see how this game plays out between two teams that really hate each other, but, you know, trying to finish on a good note.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many storylines over the week. We talked last week about, you know, Lamar Jackson and all this weirdness. You know, it seems like Tua's dead man walking in Miami. I mean, do you think there's is there any way in God's green earth Lamar Jackson's not on the Ravens next year?
No, there's no way in the world.
Yeah,
there's no way in the world Lamar Jackson won't be a part of the Baltimore Ravens. And if that was to happen, Lord, I hope we can get him in Pittsburgh.
By the way,
if they're dumb right. enough to, if they're foolish yep. enough to do something like that, please. But no, man, listen, man, it's been a down year for Lamar Jackson. He's dealt with a hamstring injury. And it seems like when he returned from that hamstring injury, he wasn't healthy. Then he just dealt with a back ailment 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So it's been a difficult road for him. But don't get it twisted. Lamar Jackson is still an elite quarterback. He is still him. And everything they've done in terms of success has been predicated on who he is as a player. So, I like I said, if they're foolish enough, call Mike. Man, listen, no, I would gladly take him in Pittsburgh.
Right. By the way, just real quick as a follow-up, I heard, if I read between the lines, you don't want Aaron Rodgers coming back even if he wanted to.
Uh-oh.
No. If Aaron Rodgers wants to come back, I'll say this. If Aaron Rodgers wants to come back, because if you look at what's option B, right now we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at what Aaron Rodgers did this year, he's been a pleasant surprise for our team. So if we can add more arsenal in the passing game, primarily speaking the wide receiver position, and if Aaron Rodgers wants to come back and he's highly motivated like he has been this season, I welcome him because right now we don't even know what option B would be.
Who wins this game on now, Sunday night, and why?
You know who I'm taking.
Why?
You know who I'm taking.
Okay, so why? Why do they win?
I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers because Lamar Jackson, historically speaking, he struggled against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he's 3-5, 3-6, something like that. Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin, he's had a really, really good way of winning ball games against Coach Harbaugh. Pittsburgh, in the last 9 home divisional games, they're 8-1. When they play against AFC North opponents at home in Acrisure Stadium, they win those ball games more so than they lose. And you know how it is for us as analysts and how we study the game, we watch the game. Even when we think we know, we really don't know. But what do we always go back to? Numbers, trends, right? That's what we do.
Yeah.
When we analyze games and we give our prediction, numbers are that final defining argument for whatever side we're going with. And those numbers tell me I like us to win. Now, I am a bit concerned not having Darnell Washington, not having DK Metcalf, but they've had a full week to prepare without both of those guys. Mm-hmm. So I think they will have a game plan in place. And our defense, that's why I'm really, really hyped about this game going in Pittsburgh Steelers' favor, because of the defense. One thing about Pittsburgh, when they played against Lamar Jackson hasn't been Lamar Jackson. Even going back to the first meeting with Derrick Henry. Yeah, Derrick Henry ran for almost 500 yards against the Green Bay Packers, but ain't the same when he plays against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Be another game up for grabs in another division, should I say, is our division. Panthers-Bucks. Who wins this game?
Oh, my goodness. Now, that's a good one. The division nobody wants to win. And real quick, before I give you my answer about who will win this game, I'm sorry, Falcon fans, but I got to do it to you. Just imagine if Atlanta beat Miami, right, or that come from behind
Jets.
Loss never happened against Carolina or the
right.
Jets.
Right.
If they won any one of those games, you know they would be sitting in the catbird seat to win the division.
Right.
Think about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pick any of your favorite special teams gaffes, you know, Bryant. We've talked about that. You know, where they flipped the field. That happened in Berlin with the Colts. And by the way, the defense, Ulbrich gets a lot of bit of love because he's probably the best of all the coaches on the staff. But you allowed 448 yards passing to Bryce Young. You gave 240 yards of rushing to Ryan Clark. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and then look at it. The special team woes started week one. You still got special teams woes. If you make the field goal week one against Tampa,
right,
you win that game.
Well, at least you're in overtime.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Falcon fans. The body is still warm. That was a little too soon. But you should have won this division. But for me, guys, I side with Carolina, man. I side with Carolina. And here's why. Tampa, in the last 8 games, they're 1-7. They're 1-7. In those last 8 games in that 1-7 stretch, Baker Mayfield thrown 12 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. I really believe Baker is not healthy. I really believe that shoulder ailment that surfaced, I think, weeks ago against Detroit, he's never gotten healthy, fully healthy from that. And that's why we've seen a decline in production, especially in the last 7 games, because in his first 8 games, he only had 2 interceptions. He was in that MVP conversation. We all was throwing his name into that conversation in the first 8 games, a stretch in which they were 6-2. And when you factor in their defense, they'll be without their both starting cornerbacks, Jamel Dean, Zion McCullen. They're going to be out. Their defense was already an Achilles heel. They were already vulnerable in spots. Not having their 2 starting cornerbacks, that's a big-time loss. And then when you look at the trend, guys, with Carolina, right, I got to go back to October 19th. That win against the Jets. Since then, they've been in this world of win-loss, 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 win-loss. Look at their schedule. It's been an untimely trend of inconsistencies where they win and they lose. What happened to Carolina last week? Did they win or did they lose last week?
Lost.
They lost.
Yep.
They lost to Seattle. So if that trend stands firm, and it's been firm since October the 19th, that means they win next week, this week. Because they've been in this win-loss scenario.
Right.
And I think that's gonna be the telling sign. And I have more faith, guys, in Bryce Young than I do Baker in this stage, honestly.
Right. Hey, before we wrap up with Bryce McFadden, guys, from CBS Sports, and again, to get the number one seed in the NFC, because San Fran beat Seattle in the first week of the season, 49ers, I don't know if you're as impressed, Ryan, Bryant, as we are. The injuries they overcome, you know, the job that they do and what they got. And the 49ers, by the way, the only bad news is Bill Vinovich is the ref for this one, guys. He's a train wreck. You like the 49ers or Seattle?
Yeah, you talk about impressive. You know, I said last weekend, you know, after they beat Chicago, I think I felt like Kyle Shanahan should win Coach of the Year. Missing so many key contributors, not making no excuses, still finding ways to win. Think about it. I mean, Bosa has missed time. Your starting quarterback has missed time. You know, Fred Warner has missed time. Cornerbacks have missed time. Offensive linemen have been banged up. All the wide receivers been banged up at some point. George Kittle has missed time. You know, Trent Williams has been injured. Brandon Ayuk hasn't played one game all year, and they're in competing for the number one spot in the NFC. So I think Kyle Shanahan should win Coach of the Year. To answer your question, I'm gonna take Seattle, guys. I'm taking San Francisco. And when I look at defining like real Game 7 like moments, like they're getting ready to embark in because of what's at stake, two things that I always go to: who has the better coaching, who has the better quarterback. Right now, both coaches have done a great job. Mike McDonald has been outstanding. Heck, he should be in that Coach of the Year running as well. But I think, collectively speaking, Kyle Shanahan has done a better job. And then you look at the quarterback. Who do you trust more at the quarterback position, Sam Darnold or Brock Purdy? I think the consensus would say Brock Purdy. I mean, Brock Purdy in his last six games, and man, he's been hibachi hot, completing 71% of his passes. 19 total touchdowns, guys, in his last six games. 19 total touchdowns. That's tops in the National Football League. So he's been the better of the two when you look at the quarterbacks. So I think that plays a major factor, of course, with San Fran being at home. And also, too, the last key nugget I'll give you guys, in the last eight meetings between these two teams, San Francisco is 7-1 against Seattle.
Own them. They own them. B, before you get out of here, a team nobody's talking about, but I think they're dangerous in the playoffs. It's the Houston Texans. They've won eight in a row. They may have the best defense in the National Football League. I just feel like people are sleeping on this team. They play the Colts on Sunday in the 1 o'clock window. What do you think about those guys?
Man, I might do it with you. I love their defense guys, Carl, Mike, because they got a bunch of guys that look like what they hunt on their defense. Like quarterbacks, they don't stand a chance trying to run from them guys because they go get them. And you look at the cornerbacks, I think they have the best duo of corners in the National Football League. You know, Bulldog alum, Kamari Lassiter.
Yep.
I think he's one of the best tackling cornerbacks in the National Football League. Derek Stingley is a do-it-all guy. Bullock, all Hawkins safety. Jalen Petrie. And those guys play football the right way. And now the offense is starting to come along a little bit, which has helped them overall as a team, because if their offense can just make the necessary plays, that's it. They don't got to be a 35-point offense. But if they make the necessary plays and protect the football, their defense will do the best. And I said last week, when they had that double-digit lead against the Chargers, I knew it was over. You don't give a defense like the Houston Texans has a double-digit lead and expect for an opposing team to come back with the way how they hunt quarterbacks. I'm right there with you. And if Jacksonville happens to lose and Houston wins the AFC South, and they will have a home playoff game in the first round.
It's going to be crazy. Few games matter. Seeding matters this weekend, and every team that's in the playoffs is playing for it. B, thank you so much, man. Appreciate you. Happy New Year. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Cool. All right, guys, we got plenty more to dive into. More on the Falcons and more on the Dogs lost to Ole Miss last night. When we come back, what's the SEC record right now in these bowl games in the college football playoff? Doesn't look good. It's Dukes and Bell. Yeah, I told Michelle, I said, Mike's in a band, you know this. And she was like, really? He's a rock star? And I was like, well, he's the drummer in this band. And so she did not know, because I told her, I said, well, he did it last year, right? That was your first year doing it?
No, I got a buddy. I met these guys playing golf when I moved down to the South Side, left the city during COVID. And in 21, I met my buddy Ron and a whole bunch of dudes. And we got Caesar's a keyboard player, great singer. And we have like a cover band. So it started off as just kind of fun doing like Elvis tunes.
Okay.
And then now this is all disco. So a lot of Casey, old 70s stuff. Casey and the Sunshine Band and like, you know, Chic. And
do
all,
a little dance.
All the stuff I love, you know. The freak, you know, like all that.
Okay.
So, and it was just great because we're having a good time. And then the girls start requesting tunes. This is Braylon. This is one of the golf clubs down in Peachtree City. And so Ron, if he doesn't know the lyrics, you know, you're in the middle of the show and he's got his phone for the lyrics. And so girls like, Honky Tonk Woman! And so the whole band knows it. I start hitting like the cowbell, Papa Doom doing the opening.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, hold on, I got to find the lyrics on my phone. You're killing the energy. You're killing the energy. Me and Steve's like, you know, I'm mad at Jin Sung, Barroom Queen. And everybody knows Honky Tonk Woman. Let's go.
You know, he doesn't have one of those karaoke machines that has the lyrics in front of him.
But he didn't, for whatever reason, he didn't have Honky Tonk Woman. So I'm like, will you just stop? And just we'll just make it work. Okay.
Gotcha.
Just make it up. You know what I mean? Like, just sing the chorus. She's a Honky Tonk Woman. But anyway, by the way, let me tell this story now. Real quick, before Becky, she's on the golf course. You won't hear this.
You hope.
I was telling, well, it'll get back to her anyway, but guys, Day-Day, you know, Oren, Carl, you know, you've been married for a minute. Sometimes, that's how you get taken for granted, but sometimes it's nice to know that, you know, you still have a little game.
Yeah.
So we get done with the first set, and you know, this is get down at the country clubs. A lot of folks, you know, got some coin and such. And there's a sexy blonde lady comes over. She starts chatting me up. She goes, oh, you're doing a great job, and nice to meet you.
So you are a rock star.
And so she's like, can I buy you a drink? Buy me a drink. Well, yes. I mean, why not?
Okay.
So Becky, I guess, was out, you know, again, Virginia Slim there having a cigarette break out front with the old, hey, doll, you should probably switch the filters. Anyway, she comes back. Into the room, and I got to tell you, I mean, Jackie Joyner Kersee couldn't sprint as fast as Becky did when she saw me with this blonde. Boom! Hi, I'm Becky. I'm Mike's wife. I'm like, and this would be Becky, my wife. You know,
like an empire.
And then Becky's like, I heard about her. She's like a widower. She's rich. I'm like, well,
oh, really?
Did you finish the drink, Mike? Did you finish the drink at least?
Yeah. I was like, well, she's just about to buy. We have a tab. I mean, she's like,
that's great.
So anyway, that was my New Year's Eve. But anyway, that was a lot of fun. Thanks, folks, who came down. And again, if the Captain Ron Band plays soon, we'll hopefully no more Stone songs for you.
No hot women at the show at all, please.
I'm thinking about Twilight. You guys remember the Twilight series where yeah. The vampires are there right there. That's what I'm thinking about as soon as it happens.
And there's another, and by the guy, so the guy's in my band, Ron is a guy, he's like 60, but it looks like he's like 45. Caesar is this good looking guy. His family's from Panama. I mean, he looks like Andy Garcia. He's a good looking guy. So both, it's funny because everybody in the band has a very possessive wife. So when Ron is talking to some folks at the bar, and Alicia's like, what's going on? He's just working the room. He's just, you know, taking requests and such. Okay, I'm going to go sit over here now.
Yeah. I mean, what do they think you guys are doing? Oh, we got a room after the show. We were wondering if you hot ladies would love to meet up. I mean, what are you guys doing? It's a community event. Really? Seriously.
But anyway, that was one aspect of the show. So like, oh, I'm like, oh, my buddy Ron. I'm like, oh, look at this. The first fight of the new year.
Yeah, it's bound to happen. Right. You know what? Somebody's going to be overserved, but that's probably another reason why it goes
right. And by the way, it's funny. I was telling Day-Day before the show, this is arguably the most coherent I've been on a New Year's Eve because I have to, you know, what sucks about being the drummer, you got to pack all the gear and you got to unpack it. And I had to drive home in Peachtree City. You know, it's Cop City.
Sure.
So basically kind of shut it down other than a champagne toast around like 10 o'clock. So I had to be, you know, clean and clear to get it home. And luckily did, and you know, be careful out there. But yeah, it was great times, and it is kind of fun. But it does stink when you are the one who's kind of sober, and everyone around you is taking Uber.
Oh, of course.
And slowly getting wasted. That is kind of a drag.
Yeah, no doubt. We again, wishing you a very happy new year, and hope that you were safe, and enjoying maybe a day off. I'll tell you this, here at Colony Square, where we are, it seems like everybody's off today. We rolled up, I was like, oh, look. I must be in the front row.
Oh, man, great parking. You know, at the old station, we had personalized parking space.
Did you really?
Can we ask for that now? We're number one?
Did it have your name on it?
Well, remember that, or we had assigned parking. We had good, the on-air staff.
That.
Had,
no, I love that.
Right by
that.
The elevator. Well,
as much as we pay here, we should.
By the way, Carl mentioned it the other day, and Steak's been talking about it. Thanks so much, as you guys know, for making us the number one show, and the station's had an unbelievable couple of years, and this year, everybody number one. Thanks to you guys.
All right, man. We are going to talk plenty more about what went down last night. I will tell you this, though. For all the SEC chatter, and this is not me being a hater, it's just facts. SEC's 2-6 in the college football playoff in these bowl games, okay? When they are not facing each other. So you talk about Ole Miss beating Tulane. You talk about Texas beating Michigan. There's your two wins. This has not been a prosperous postseason for the SEC. Meanwhile, guys, you look at the Final Four and you go, well, Big Ten's going to have somebody in there. I mean, you know, that's the way it looks right now.
Right.
And the way Indiana played and beat the crap out of Alabama, guys. Alabama!
Why do you hate Alabama so much?
Mike, I don't know if anybody's beating Indiana. The way they look right now, I just – and again, these games could come down to a turnover, an interception. You know this. But the way this team is playing – Mike, Alabama beat Georgia earlier this year. This game wasn't even close yesterday.
Yeah, and I know that Kirk Cignetti, as we said, I was late to the party last year. I was doubting them because he was getting his, you know, he's implementing his game plan, but he brought all those kids from James Madison who are just, look, they're physical. The defense gets after it. The quarterback, everybody's talking about it. They say he's like AI generated. Have you seen some of the memes that are out there?
He's a robot.
He's
a robot.
Like, he's too perfect. Well, I mean, you know, hey, you know, but for the grace of God, go I. But Fernando Mendoza, he literally sounds like the guy you want dating your daughter.
He's a robot.
You know, and he's just he's just too perfect. But they're making it happen. And then Miami, we said this earlier. Look, I think there are reputations that you earn as a coach, and you got to prove people wrong if the reputation is negative. In the case, let's be honest, of Miami, and I do think that it was well-deserved.
Mario
Cristobal chokes. Mario Cristobal's in-game management. Remember Georgia Tech a couple years ago down at Hard Rock?
Bad decision.
He's done some really goofy stuff. It's almost like this team is too good for them to maybe be in that scenario where they screw it up. The kicker thing was just the kicker thing. It was a windy conditions in College Station a couple weeks ago in that grinder of a game against A&M. But Cristobal, Carl, he's built a strong team from the trenches. What I think Brent Key is trying to do at Tech, from inside out. He's got great O-line, great D-line, tremendous skill position, and Carson Beck has been great.
I don't know if you guys remember, maybe not. We have a lot of guests on. We talk to a lot of people. But David Pollack came on this show and told you guys at the beginning of the year, Miami's got the best O-line and D-line in college football. And you guys, everybody's like, come on.
Right.
Because of what Mike's talking about with Mario Cristobal screwing things up. Pollack told us this way early in the season. And now look how dominant they've been. They were in a defensive struggle the last game, won it. Shut down the offense yesterday that, you know, again, when you go look at these numbers, it's pretty startling to see how good their defense is. But this is what it's about, Mike. And that's why I don't know if they're going to win it. I keep waiting for Carson Beck to screw some things up.
Right.
But if they're going to, it's going to be because of how good they are up front.
Right. And the thing about Cristobal, and here's the crazy thing. You know, the Ole Miss coaches, you and I were just texting with Rusty Manziel during the break. You know, he's got everybody who's from LSU is in LSU right now. The game is Thursday against the U. And I don't know how this coaching staff will be able to pull this off. Everybody's hoping that Charlie Weiss just says, I know what, screw it, I quit. Golden, I'm coming to work for you at Ole Miss. That's not going to happen.
No, because he's not going to get that money.
But it's all the coaches. Everyone's got a responsibility to lock in all the transfer portal because LSU's just backed up the Brinks truck. They expect Lane Kiffin to be in one of these games next year. So there's no rest for the wicked. But to be in, I mean, you got to play Thursday and you're Ole Miss and you've got all this crap that you got to deal with, the distraction, the coaches going back and forth, not even there. But this is a game I think Miami is going to be there. I think Miami's going to beat Ole Miss.
Well, they're going to be playing in their backyard because that's where the national championship is.
Right. And the only thing, unless Trinidad Chambliss just continues to do like that Mike Vick kind of thing in 99, where he just is the one-man gang.
Final Four has two schools that have never won it. Indiana, which is another reason why Alabama fans are PO'd because they've never done anything.
Right.
And then Oregon, who's never won it. Been good. Been flashy. Great uniforms. Good coaches over the years. They've never won it. And then Ole Miss, Mike, you're talking about the early 60s. You got to go back for a championship. And then the U was 20 years ago the last time they played for a championship. My point is this is all new blood. There are people who don't remember the U, Mike, like we do. And there are certainly people who don't know that Ole Miss actually had a championship caliber team in the early 60s. And these other two programs have been non-existent on this level when you right. talk about winning it all. Oregon, again, very good. But this is Dan Lanning's quest here to say, hey, I am one of the premier coaches. I'm being paid as such, and our team is good enough. This rematch has me very intrigued because Indiana went on the road and beat Oregon earlier this year. But this is new blood, guys. And as far as the SEC is concerned, Miami, that's ACC. Old Miss is your only hope now to represent right. the SEC in the national championship game.
Yeah, look, and for years we've always laughed, and it's SEC country. You know, when you have a slogan, it just means more. You got to win bowl games. You can't say, "Well, everybody transferred, everybody's in the portal, coaches left,
guys opted out."
Yeah, because I remember this. The argument was in 2008 when Utah beat Alabama, when Whittingham beat Alabama. It's like, well, they weren't in the SEC. You know, they weren't playing for a championship. Look, it still matters. It matters to Big Ten fans. Big Ten fans are going to be crowing about the Big Ten's dominance in the bowl games and beating the SEC. It happened, you know? So Kirby, as we said, he took ownership of it. And one thing that we'll talk more about when Mike – I'm sure Mike Griffith's got strong opinions on this. Carl and I were just talking off the air. I can't accept it, and neither – I don't think you do either – that the message never got through to Gunnar Stockton. The ball's not supposed to be snapped on that crucial fourth down. I mean, a team that runs with like Bobby Knight, like discipline that Georgia does, how does that occur? You think Kirby's fudging it here?
I feel like it's a convenient excuse. But I would just tell Dawg fans, and I think you guys know this, when the ball is not supposed to be snapped, it's not snapped.
Not under Kirby's watch, is it, right?
That's not how this works. And so what you're saying is the players had Mike Carblanche to go out there and do whatever the hell they wanted to do. I know what coach called, but I'm snapping it anyway.
Right.
That doesn't happen. So I'm having a hard time, yes, believing that was the situation. But if you say it wasn't supposed to be snapped, all of a sudden, Mike, everybody goes, oh, well, they screwed that up. Kirby says it wasn't supposed to be snapped.
Man, there's certain moments in games, and we said that and being so conservative. I like three timeouts, a minute 43. I know you're on the 17, but Gunner's no longer that Gunner that was last year against Notre Dame. He's a guy that knows what to do.
Let him play.
And I still think you don't dial enough for Branch, but hey, you had a chance to use him. Use him or lose him, right?
Daily downloads brought to you by Akins Ford. Guys, check out the year-end sales at AkinsFord.com. We are going to talk more about the NFL and certainly more about the Dogs and these matchups in the college football playoff. Mike said it. Quick turnaround. Thursday night, Friday night. Those are the games, right? They're not going to be back-to-back. You get one Thursday night, one Friday night, and then we know who's playing in the national championship. It's Dukes and Bell.